Hello, and welcome to Sobercast, where we provide AA speaker meetings and workshops in podcast format. We're an ad-free podcast, and if you enjoy listening, please help us be self-supporting by visiting Sobercast.com, look for the donate link, and drop a dollar or two into our virtual basket. We hope you enjoy the podcast. Have a great day.
Okay, what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. So, as I said, my name is David. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is 2/28/14. I have a home group, which is Duck Island, Monday night, 6 o'clock at a Greenwood Christian Church, and I have a sponsor. So, what it was like, I guess I can say that, you know, some of my earliest memories are of my parents drinking. My father always had a beer in his hand or beer at the table. I remember him giving me the beer caps, you know, when I was 8 years old and I would solve the puzzle. And that was kind of the way it was. You know, alcohol was just there and everywhere and it was fun. It was just part of life. But I didn't start drinking really young. I had a sister who did, but I was kind of the nerdy kid. I was always the one off alone by myself. Always with the book, you know, I'd get picked on a lot, and I was short, and so I always felt kind of apart from everybody. I always felt also that I could never measure up to my dad's expectations. So, you know, that set a pattern for me, and but drinking was not a big thing for me until I got to college. So went off to school, and I could kind of reinvent myself, and part of that was alcohol. Alcohol is everywhere on campus. It was easy to get. Nobody cared what age you were. And so, again, it was fun. Drinking was just what everybody did, and I went along. I didn't like the taste at all, but, you know, I kept at it. And, you know, it gradually grew on me. So I don't, you know, part of college life, I didn't really feel like it ever impacted me, although I could say it impacted me when in my junior year, my girlfriend got pregnant. We were both drinking at the time. She decided she wanted to have the baby, so my daughter was born the summer before my senior year in college. And that, you know, rocked my world a bit. But, you know, managed to graduate, managed to get through it, and basically, moved back to Seattle in the early 90s, a couple years out of college. And if anybody remembers Seattle in the early 90s, it was kind of the explosion of the microbrew culture here. So I hit it right at the right time. And it was great. You know, it was everything and more, and I was into it. And I was the one going on all the brewery tours and asking the questions and, you know, learning and reading about beer and making beer and collecting beer stuff. I mean, I mean, at one point I had like 1,000 beer bottles in my basement. Literally, I had like 300 different pint glasses. I had coasters, beer tab. I still have like 200 pint glasses. So if you want one, just come on by. I got plenty to share. So, and that's my collector nature too. I just can't get rid of stuff. So, anyways. So what happened though? Nothing really. In my 20s, let's say, except for depression. I guess I skipped the part about my mom's side of the family, which was riddled with alcoholism and depression. As far as the alcoholism in my mom's family, I didn't really know about it, but it was my grandparents, my aunts and uncles, my cousins, Irish Catholic family. My siblings, I have 3 siblings, 2 are addicts. As I mentioned, my sister was started early, but she got in the program at age 20, and she's been in and out for a long time. But my mom and my brother are still in active addiction, and they're the ones who live here in Seattle. So I have to see that go on every time I visit, and I know that there's nothing I can really do about that except stay sober myself. So, but there was also depression, and for me, you know, all I thought was that I had this disease of depression, and I never connected alcohol as part of that. So, you know, I was going to therapy. I was going to, I was on antidepressants, you know, for 2 decades. But that was just something I tried to deal with, never connecting that maybe the antidepressants or the therapy wasn't going to work very well if I was drinking alcohol every night and taking in a depressant, kind of counteracted it. So basically, you know, I struggle with depression, and in fact, I looked at alcohol as the best medication for depression, the best medication for if you're having a problem in your life. You know, that's just what all my friends did. But for me, maybe it was just a little more serious, and I looked at it as something that I needed to get through whatever it was to get through, you know, whether it was stresses at work or with my wife, kids. I ended up getting married to my girlfriend. We had a second child. So, you know, I'm living the normal life in my early 30s, you know, with the depression, the drinking. But I guess you could say the first major incident that happened was when I was in my early 30s, and I went to a friend's bachelor party, and I was the driver, but I was also the drinker and the driver at the same time, and I drove home at about 3 in the morning drunk, and ended up smashing my vehicle into the side of a wall, and but, you know, drove home, made it home, and I simply called Metro and told them that my Vanpool van had skidded into a wall, and that's why it was all smashed up. And they bought that story. There was no repercussions from that incident. So, again, I didn't put anything together. I didn't see alcohol as the problem. It was everything else in my life that was hard. But alcohol was the way that I was going to deal with the stress and the problems. And never put it together. So, life continued that way, and I suppose as we talk about a progressive disease, it progressed, you know, a little bit more drinking, a little bit more troubles, you know, more unhappiness with my marriage, and trying to get by and using alcohol as the crutch to do it. And then, I guess you could say, you know, maybe things hit crisis mode. I lost my job of 13 years. I worked at Microsoft. There was a group layoff, and I lost my job in 2006. And that was, you know, a huge blow just to my overall sense of self, of who I was and, you know, as a provider for my family or whatever. So that, you know, ended up hitting me hard. And after about 5 months of unemployment, one night I decided that my wife had said something that was just a little bit too critical, and that was it. And I went and bought a six-pack and a bottle of aspirin and drove to Golden Gardens and drank 4 or 5 beers and swallowed about 80 aspirin. And to my dismay, nothing really happened. And I was like, what's going on? This is what I read supposed to happen. You're supposed to do this and something happened. So I was like, okay, whatever. So I drove around and I drove home and I told my wife and, you know, called the paramedics, ended up going to Harborview, pumping my stomach. And, you know, no harm done physically, but, you know, that was a huge blow to the marriage. And about 2 or 3 months later, ended up getting separated and then divorced. So, you know, again, I'm not connecting any of this to alcohol. I don't see alcohol as the problem. And I don't remember at the time anybody saying that, you know, gee, Dave, have you looked at the alcoholism thing? I think one therapist said something, but it went whoosh. So, you know, I was like, well, you know, my problems are mental and da, da, da. I remember now, I recently talked to my ex-wife about this, and she's like, well, you know, I used to say, can you quit drinking? And I would say, yeah, I can. I don't want to. Are you crazy? I mean, I was in love with alcohol. I mean, clearly that was the whole story, and it always worked for me. So I didn't see any reason to stop. In fact, I couldn't. And I never admitted that to myself, but there wasn't going to be any way to do it. So, once I got divorced, then, wow, suddenly I had this time on my hands. I didn't have anybody to go home to. I had my son 3 nights a week. But on the nights I didn't have him, it was, woohoo, you know, I could be out at the bars. You know, my friends would have work the next day, so they would go home at 10 o'clock, and I'd be like, where are you going? They're still serving alcohol. So I would just keep going. That was my thing. And you know, stuff started happening. I started getting 86 from bars. I remember waking up one morning at 5 a.m. in the passenger seat of my car in front of my building, having no idea how I got there, whether someone drove me home or whatever, you know, obviously. So starting to get the blackout drinking. But I really didn't want to face it, and I basically kept on until fall of 2009 when I had my first DUI car accident, and drinking all day in a bar and deciding to go to another bar to meet somebody and hit a car. One DUI, it's kind of a slap on the wrist. And I said, oh, yeah, I'm guilty, whatever. I'll plead guilty and do my one night in jail. And that was it. I don't even remember them sending me to AA. I certainly don't have any memory of anything sticking in my head, like, oh, this is a problem. So I went on my merry way. And it took two more years of drinking until my second DUI car accident in the fall of 2011. And that's where stuff gets serious. But I didn't believe that it needed to get serious. And it took 4 months for them to charge me. And in that time, I remember just continuing to drive drunk and drink more and more, not really realizing what was going on. I remember in downtown Portland, driving drunk the wrong way down a one-way street. And, these kind of horror story memories now come back. And I'm like, I was out of control and I didn't know it. But, you know, I wasn't going to learn until they really beat it out of me. So basically got a charged alcohol bracelet on my ankle. I drank. They said, well, you can either go to jail or you can go to inpatient treatment. So I chose inpatient treatment and did 21 days, got out, drank the day I got out. I wasn't listening. You know, I wasn't listening to anything anybody said. And so things progressed, you know. When the alcohol bracelet came off, I thought, well, I can start drinking again. I was sentenced to AA. I was going and getting my slip sign, you know, and maybe I was hearing some things, but I still wasn't, I hadn't surrendered. You know, surrender for me was going to be the toughest part because I'm too smart. You know, I'm different from you people. I can handle this, you know, don't worry about it. I'm different. So I kept drinking and trying to get away with it, and they wouldn't, you know, test me in my outpatient, and I thought no one cared. So I started drinking more and drinking more and drinking more. And eventually I found out they did care, and they caught me, and they said, okay, that's it. You're convicted. You've got to go 30 days in jail. And I said, I can't go to jail. I graduated from Stanford. I worked at Microsoft and Amazon. Do you know who I am? Apparently the judge didn't really care, so I off to 30 days in jail in fall 2013, and that would probably, you know, was what caught my attention. I remember thinking, yeah, this what I'm doing is not working. The way I'm trying to live my life and deal with it is not working. So maybe I ought to change, but that's going to be super hard. So what happened is after doing my time in jail, you know, I started maybe listening a little bit more and going to a few more meetings. I mean, I still had to go get my slip sign. And also the court was, you know, they knew now that, you know, I needed to be watched closely. So they did. And they made me come pee in a cup every few weeks down at the courthouse. And that really was a blessing. I mean, it helped me. It helped me when that first year of sobriety, when I was white knuckling it a lot, I was also terrified to go to jail because that's what's going to happen. You know, you go back to jail if you drink after, you know, I was like 1 month of my 12 months maximum sentence. So it got me through it. But, you know, that's eventually going to come to an end. And it did eventually earlier this year where they're like, okay, we're done with you. And then it was on me. But by that time, I had actually figured some stuff out, thanks to you guys. I mean, I got involved in AA. I got service positions. You know, I was secretary of two different meetings. I was coffee maker. And for me, that responsibility was sacred, and I was going to do it. And I couldn't drink because people were counting on me. And, you know, I didn't want to raise my hand and say, you know, I've got 2 days anymore. You know, I didn't want to do that. That was my time was precious. So what it's like today is a ton better. I've got a good job. I've got a good relationship with my children. I volunteer on homelessness issues. I exercise regularly. My program is this. I meditate every morning and do reflection and try to stay in the now. I go to meetings and have service positions. I talk to other alcoholics. I have a good sponsor who gets it. We talk about how to live life sober. That's what we talk about. And we talk about AA, and we talk about the readings, and I talk to other alcoholics, and I listen, and I go to these meetings and listen to people. And whenever I'm tempted, I still have those obsessions. I still have the feelings that eventually maybe I can drink again. But I'll play the tape through, and I'll hear other people talk, and I'll remember that my life is so much better now than it was. And I want to keep it that way. So thank you guys very much.
Hi, I'm Kayla. I'm an alcoholic. Let me take this off so it doesn't make noise. I'm really nervous. My sobriety date is June 11th of 2015. I chose that date because it was the first date that I met my sponsor. So I do have a sponsor, and she has a sponsor, my grand sponsor, and so on. Great sponsor family. I'll share a little bit about how I was as a child, because I think it's important. I was a crazy child, kind of like I am now, but I guess I thought I was normal back then. I would do things like put soap in the hot tub and create bubbles everywhere, and I thought that was normal. Now I know that's not really things that kids do. My 9-year-old doesn't do that. I would run into the forest and get poison oak, and I knew I was highly allergic to poison oak, but I would continue to run into the forest and get poison oak, which I think is kind of a metaphor to my drinking. Keep going after something that I'm highly allergic to. So I'm just going to talk about kind of what got me here, the major years of my addiction. I think I didn't have, I hear a lot of people speak and they talk about a moment when they felt like alcohol was the answer. And I didn't really feel that way. I drank when I was younger with my siblings, you know, they would say, you know, try this alcohol or smoke this weed or on, it's cool, it's fun. I didn't really think it was cool. I liked my mind, and I liked to be in my mind until a little bit later. When I was 16, I got married. I'm not sure that I actually got married to the person because I was madly in love with them. I think I just got married because I wanted to escape from something. I don't really know what, I guess, from myself. So I ran away, and I got emancipated because my parents wouldn't sign for me to get married, so I had to emancipate myself. And I got married, and I still didn't drink or use any drugs. I decided that I wanted to have a baby, so I got pregnant, and I had my child, and shortly after, I began to be abused by my husband, mentally, physically, emotionally, and I more and more felt like I needed to escape. I couldn't handle anything, being alone. But I still didn't use drugs or alcohol. I kind of just held on. I kind of white-knuckled through years and years and years of abuse. My husband was in the military, and he went overseas. He came back, and he was not the same. And I got the grunt of that, and so it got pretty bad. So I started drinking. I remember the night I went to the liquor store, and I remember thinking, this makes other people's pain go away. So I'm going to drink until my pain goes away. And so I went to the store and I bought 40s of Old English and 4 Locos. I'm a cheap date. Just $3 and I'm good. So I pounded that alcohol. I literally pounded that alcohol, and I went on a binge for over a year. And that night was significant because of my thinking of, this is what I'm going to do to make my pain go away. But as soon as I made that decision, I didn't make any other decisions after that. I remember drinking every night until I would either get kicked out of a bar, get into a fight. I would wake up somewhere, sometimes next to a railroad track, in my car, sometimes next to the river, sometimes in a bed, sometimes with no clothes on. And it was really scary. But it wasn't scary enough to make me stop drinking. It was actually, you know, kind of fun to me. I would call it recycled makeup, and I would get up and go back to the bar and with my recycled makeup and wake the bartenders up that I, you know, just had kicked me out the night before. But it got scary when I like to drink and drive. That is something that I don't have a problem doing. I am very blessed to be alive. I'm blessed that I have not killed anyone in a vehicle. But I have come very close. I hit a semi with my daughter, who's now 9. She was 5. Because I was under the influence of many things, and I was drowsy and tired and everything else. I was knocked out by the airbag, and she luckily just had some glass in her face that she had to have taken out. I still have glass in my face from that, and I used to have glass come out of my arms from that accident. But I walked out of that accident, and that didn't make me stop drinking or driving. I remember one night, well, another important thing to know about me is that I also like to run away from my problems. So if something, if I get into trouble, I will go to another state, or I will... you know, it's that state's fault. It's the cop's fault. It's that jail's fault. It's my family's fault. And I will go make a whole new life somewhere else. I have been known to be a runner. The cops call me a runner. The judges call me a runner. I'm a runner. and it's true. I think that right now is the longest time that I've stayed planted in one place. So anyways, back to the drinking and driving. I ran to Oregon, and I got a job somewhere managing a restaurant. And I remember waking up, right near Crater Lake, there's a pretty dangerous highway, Highway 97. Goes right around the lake. It's really icy. It's hard to drive sober, let alone if you're blacked out. And I used to drive it every night blacked out. And I remember waking up right after the lake, and I was crashed into a barbed wire fence. I had just missed, you know, going into the water. And instead of, you know, calling for help or calling the police, I don't know, that's the last thing I think of doing, I just grabbed the barbed wire and to get off my car because I was so ashamed. I didn't want anyone to know that I had wrecked my car again. I remember thinking, like, I was going to say the S word, but I remember thinking, like, I did it again. Like, how did this happen again? Like, how did I get drunk again? I was just at work. And how did I just crash my car again? And I remember I dropped all the money that I had made that night. As a waitress, you live off of your tips, and that was, like, all my money. And I was so ashamed and embarrassed that I just left my pouch there at the scene, and I just took off. My money ended up being there, like, a couple days later when I went back to find it. But that still didn't make me stop drinking. I went on to, things got bad. I couldn't stop drinking. I couldn't stop, taking pills, not showing up to work. And everything was everybody else's fault all the time. And I was really great. I was a upstanding person, and, so I needed to go onto a mountain and go trim weed for a living. That's what I needed to do. It made sense. I would hide there from my husband, who was still psychotic. And I could make money, and I could drink, and everything would be great. So I went there, and that is the first time that anyone ever called me an alcoholic, and that didn't go over well with me. I guess I had never, I always looked at my husband as an alcoholic or my parents, family. I never saw myself as an alcoholic. I felt like I was fixing something that, like I deserved to drink because a lot of things happened in my life. So I didn't label myself as an alcoholic. But they began to hide. At that point, I really liked whiskey. And they decided to hide the whiskey from me. And I'm not really sure what happened. Just a lot of fighting and people wanting to kick me off the mountain. And which, you know, didn't succeed with that because I didn't have the greatest morals, and I was able to stay there and continue drinking. and I ended up leaving there, and I ended up crashing my car another time. I hit a I have no idea actually what happened. All I know is what was in the police report. And they read it to me when I was in jail serving time for reckless driving. I apparently had nodded out. I had lethal doses of Xanax and alcohol in my system. And I smashed into the back of a vehicle, an older couple. And it was from the police report was from the vision of a couple and their baby that I was almost smashing into as well. So after that, I didn't have a vehicle after all my car accidents. And actually that last vehicle was not my car that I totaled. That was someone else's car that I totaled. So I had two vehicles now that I had totaled, and I still didn't stop drinking. Except now I was on foot, which is not good for, in my opinion, for an alcoholic. 'Cause you find everything. you find everything, you talk to a lot of people, and nothing was off limits for me. And it wasn't just, I say I'm an alcoholic because that is what I can't get enough of. I need more and more and more. I need gallons of it. I need more whiskey, more bottles. I don't need a chaser. I just need alcohol, alcohol, alcohol. I can never get enough. It's like a bottomless pit. But like I said, nothing is off limits. And not a line of Coke, but a pile of Coke. Not a pill, not two pills, but... Sorry, I'm going to go a little bit over. But a lot of pills. So when I got sober, it was because I didn't have a choice. I was sitting in jail because of all of my criminal behaviors, my DUIs, my my drinking, my drugging. But it was my choice to stay sober when I got out of jail. But I was living in misery. Until I came to AA. My home group is CBD, where I met my sponsor. I didn't want to come to AA. I didn't want to hang out with drunk people, which is what I thought AA was. I thought it was a bunch of just drunk people hanging out together. I was like, why do I want to go hang out with people that are drinking? Like, that doesn't make sense. that's totally what I thought, but I saw my sponsor and she looked happy. She looked happy. And she was sober. And I remember, going up to her and talking to her and getting her number, and a couple of meetings later, I asked her to be my sponsor. And my life will never be the same. I feel peace now. I do work the steps. I'm on my fourth step right now. The tail end of it, hopefully. I have done many things in sobriety that I didn't think I could do. At all. I had a baby, and I did that without any drugs, no epidural. Julie was there, Reese was there. I have gone through experiencing a death, and I've stayed sober through that. And just all of the everyday things I have not picked up. And to me, AA is truly a miracle. And I will continue to work the steps, and hopefully one day can sponsor other people. And I just know that, my journey here, it's only the beginning, and, I'm grateful for all of you, whatever the reasons that you're here. If you're new, if you've been here, if you all weren't here, I wouldn't be able to be here. And this is home to me. So thank you.
My name's Tomer and I'm an alcoholic. I have a sponsor. My home group is Bottom Feeders. My sobriety date's 4/21/2012. I almost forgot when it was. So there's the AA checklist for you. That's supposed to do that. So, I want to thank you guys for having me. I've like literally never been here before. I think I recognize two people in this room, so that's super refreshing. I live up north and see a lot of the same faces all the time, which is great, but it's really good to be somewhere where I literally do not know any of you. So anyways, I'm going to share with you a little bit about my experience, strength, and hopefully some hope, and that'll be that. So... once again, I'm Tomer, and I'm an alcoholic. I'm not from Seattle. I grew up in northwest Montana, a little town called Big Fork, which is right by Glacier. I am the son of a Lutheran minister, naturally, I ended up here. Naturally, I also grew up, my parents called it living in a fishbowl. So, small town, ultra conservative. Everybody knew where I was at all times. Everybody was reporting back to my parents at all times. Black Sabbath and Led Zeppelin was considered satanic music. They were my favorite bands. You know, so I grew up in that kind of an environment. Now, one thing I didn't realize until I had gotten sober and done some work on myself, and I don't know, but I realized that I was a happy kid. So, like, I grew up and, you know, I had a good upbringing. I considered myself a Christian as a young kid. And I had a relationship with God growing up that was very real. And I was happy. So, I got confirmed in the church somewhere around, like, fifth grade or something like that. Wasn't long after that I decided that I was going to try and find myself and figure out who I was. Obviously, I had to go to church still. My dad was a minister, but I stepped away, you know, mentally, spiritually, emotionally. Ironically enough, I became miserable. I wanted to kill myself before drugs and alcohol were introduced into my life. And I think, whatever, at a young age, I started doing drugs and alcohol. So, I rejected a God that I grew up with, became miserable, then started experimenting with drugs and alcohol. And I think that's a really important thing for me to talk about, because that spiritual malady definitely had a place in my life long before drugs and alcohol were introduced. So yeah, growing up in the church, first time I drank, it was amazing, yada, yada, yada. Obviously started doing drugs right after that. Drugs were amazing as well. Like you hear in AA, like the second that I started getting loaded, I felt like I had arrived, right? I remember like getting high in a treehouse with this chick and for the first time, like listening to Neil Young, and I had super long hair because I had to be controversial being in Montana, so and a pastor's kid. So, side note, he's got to picture it. I felt like right here was the answer to all my problems. I immediately felt calm and peace that I had not thought that I had ever felt. And then the downward spiral. For me, it wasn't slow. And for me, I hear people talk about, you know, how it was good at first and blah, blah, blah. And for me, it was like never, like, yeah, it might have been good for like a few times, but I'm the type of drinker and drug user that it's all about oblivion for me. I hated my existence. I hated everybody around me. I fucking hated people. I thought you're all disgusting and should be wiped off the face of the planet. And that's just literally who I was. You know, I was obviously like being the son of a minister, drawn into things like Karl Marx, Anton LaVey, Aleister Crowley, you know, the occult. And that's just who I was. So that came with added misery along with the drugs and alcohol. But some of it, whatever. But so my parents threatened to kick me out. I moved into a fifth wheel. I was like, fuck you guys, I'm going to move out anyways. I moved into a fifth wheel out in the woods in Montana. No heat. I had to drink a bottle of vodka a night just to stay warm. Had some blankets. Obviously, there was a lot of drugs and debauchery that went on there. I got a call from my parents after not talking to them for like a year. And they said that they were going to move, that my dad got a call to a different church, and that I could leave if I wanted to. And I was at that point where I knew I was dying. So I left. fully intending to get sober. While my parents were getting something at a gas station, I got something else outside the gas station. Fully intending to get sober in this new town, right? So I was loaded pretty much before I even set foot in this new town. You know, fired from jobs, all that shit. Couldn't have a relationship with anybody. Parents were terrified of me. My dream in life is to play music. I've been writing and recording music since I was, you know, super young. So, you know, like, I thought, like, if I had, like, the right girl, I'd get my shit together. Yeah, people are laughing. That's awesome. I thought that, like, if I had a career in music, I'd get my life together. All these things, right? So 19 years old, putting music on the internet. I got an email from a band, like my favorite band, and they asked me to like come play music with them. They had a band manager and all that. I left town at 19 and fully intending to get sober. Once again, moved down to Texas. Band got fired. I stayed there. I got the band fired. Not so I could start my own band. Super fucked up and manipulative. And whatever, I had to leave because I was so messed up I couldn't do my dream job. Got a second opportunity to come back. Went back down to Texas. Lived in a huge house. You know, everything that I wanted was paid for. Had a record deal. All I had to do was sign it, show up. Famous Hollywood director wanted some of my music in his movie that you've all seen probably. Instead of going to this place to meet these people, to sign this thing that like I thought my whole life was like my happiness was relying on, I moved into a dope house with two chicks. And I didn't talk to anybody for like a few months. And so I've known that I was an alcoholic from like the time I was 17. Like throwing up blood, drinking Wild Turkey in the morning. You know, my dad was telling me that I was an alcoholic. My dad's also in the program. He's got a ton of years, but didn't mean much coming from him. But the unmanageability, I didn't quite grasp. Because for me, I could always get my shit together long enough to not die. If I overdosed on one thing, I'd switch it up and go to a different thing. Blah, blah, blah. So anyways, I lose everything again. I don't know, I meet some chick that like I'm on and off with, and we move out to Seattle so she can go to hair school. I end up knocking her up. Try to do the right thing, I end up marrying her. I have a daughter, and I think that like my shit's together. And like for a little while, my shit kind of was together. I was the only one that drove, so whatever, I couldn't drink as much and blah, blah, blah. And, like, for a year, like, I thought that things had changed. I like to smoke crack cocaine. That's one thing that I really like to do. I don't know if you guys do, but that happened again overnight. It was supposed to be a one-time thing. Next thing I know, I got an ultimatum. I can either go to treatment or I can never see my daughter again. So, and I wasn't going to get sober for myself. Like, I mean, I was obviously trying, I was going to get sober so I could see my daughter, and something else had happened. I remember, like, getting that ultimatum from my wife at the time and being like, yeah, I need to go to treatment. Like, yeah, I'm fucked up. And for whatever reason, like, I had a few days where I had to, like, wait for some money to get transferred over so I could get into treatment, and, there's a couple days that I spent at the house, money in the bank account, booze in the fridge, and I didn't get loaded for like 2 days. And I had to go to the psych ward and convince them that I was going to kill myself because I was so scared I was going to get loaded, which they probably just looked at me and were like, shit, he's going to kill himself. But so I spent a couple days in the psych ward and then went off to Milam, and while I was in treatment, my wife took $8,000 out of my bank account, moved in with some other dude, Took everything I had. I got out of treatment. I had enough money to get into an Oxford house and buy a carton of cigarettes. That was, like, literally what I had in my bank account. And I had a backpack full of clothes that didn't fit me because she packed all the big shit that I couldn't fit in. It was pointed out to me as soon as I came to the rooms of AA that, you know, through a sponsor, that I could either have faith or I could get loaded. And I knew what getting loaded looked like, so I didn't know what faith looked like. And, you know, through the help of somebody else, I took some steps, pun intended, 12 of them. Yeah, and my life is dramatically different. I remember going to my first AA meeting when I was 19, support a friend who'd gotten arrested. I went, it was in Montana, there was like seven, like really, really old guys, and they mentioned the word Jesus, and I was out of there. And for me, man, I can't even like begin to like describe how much hate and resentment I had towards, I mean, every sort of institution, religion in particular, cops, capitalism, like, you know, and I still hold some of those resentments, but I did, you know, I had the opportunity to work some inventory and like take a look at like my fucking life and my philosophies and realize that the person that I thought that I was not whatsoever. You know, I claim to, you know, hate politicians and corporations and things that were screwing other people over, yet I was stealing from everybody every chance I could get. You know, I mean, just like, I had, and after doing my inventory and reading it to a sponsor, I had a complete shift, complete psychic shift. And I don't even know how to explain that. But I think that if you've done an inventory, you probably have an idea of what I'm talking about. I don't even know how long I'm talking, so just throw something at me when I'm done. But and man, I can't explain to you the sort of spiritual experience that I've had in working the steps and coming into contact with God of my understanding that I choose not to understand. You know, for me, God's way too big of an idea for me to pigeonhole, start micromanaging, and thinking that I know shit. Because anytime I think I know something, I'm fucked. My reality and my sobriety is that I have had an imperfect sobriety. Moved into an Oxford house, got kicked out of an Oxford house, stole a bunch of money. At the time, I met this chick in NA, because that's where you go to meet chicks. That's what I was told, so that's what I believe. Everything else I've been told in here worked, so I figured that would... ended up knocking her up. I'm engaged to her now. She's awesome, beautiful. Is that me?
Yeah.
Sweet. Anyways, so what does my life look like today? I'm engaged. I have a son that I'm present for who's 15 months old. I have a daughter that I'm fighting in court to try and be a part of her life. Been fighting for the last 3 years. Her mom's an active addiction, whatever. But I can show up in that way. I sponsor guys. I've had an experience doing the work I can't even put into words. God, to me, today is a fact. It's just a fact. God exists. I've had a spiritual experience. God exists. I don't know what God looks like, what God is. God exists. You can argue with me all day long. You're wrong. That's just how it is. If you're new and you would like to have an experience with the steps, I'd be more than happy to take you through the way that I was taken through. All I can say is, I think you caught my drift. I was a hopeless drug addict and alcoholic who hated everyone around me, but not as much as I hated myself. Multiple suicide attempts in my life, yada, yada, yada. But Alcoholics Anonymous changed my life. And when I say that, what I'm really saying is God has changed my life, right? And I came into contact with God through Alcoholics Anonymous. So, yeah, thank you guys. That's all I got.
Hey, guys. My name is Rob. I'm an alcoholic and going to be your first speaker tonight.
Hey, Rob.
Notice a few friendly faces out here. I'll tell you how I got here. Lori actually ran into me over at LIS, where I normally go to, and just asked me if I would come here and speak. So that's how I ended up here. I'd never actually been to this church, so it's neat to be here. I'm going to speak about basically three different things, kind of a little bit about me and how I am here on earth, and then a little bit about my addiction, and then a little bit of how it is now. So I'll start off with just a little history. I was born 10-1 of 70 to Robert and Christine. I spent the first 3 years of my life on a hippie bus in my family. That they weren't into really drugs and alcohol or anything like that. They were kind of the purists, the no sugar and love and stuff like that, which made it interesting, though, at the time, because I ended up going to like 18 different schools, not as an army brat or because my parents were abusive or anything. They just moved around to all these little communities, so it was kind of different. And as I'll find out later, that there is already some mental illness and addiction on both sides of my family. So in a way, I think they were kind of trying to run from that. So that became kind of a pattern for me. And I had that feeling that we talk about sometimes in AA of just never fitting in, you know, from the very, from as early as I can remember. You know, I felt comfortable around my family, and I ended up having four sisters, and there was a certain family knit there. But I never quite felt like I fit in, you know, at a new school I was going to, you know, with a pack of friends or anything like that. And I think that that's a common experience for some of us that end up being in this program. Some of the early stuff I talked about, or I'd like to talk about, is, you know, being kind of a new kind of hippie kid on the block. A lot of times, you know, from like 8 or 9 to 14, I was bullied and, you know, going to different schools. And kids are pretty ferocious. I'm not going to go into detail about exactly what happened and whatnot, but, you know, that would lead to part of me trying to overcompensate for that later. So at 15, I found alcohol, and I was pretty much what's been described to me, you know, 23 years later by my sponsor, was a true alcoholic right from the beginning, meaning that I just really drank to get drunk, or, you know, that feeling of fitting in went away. So I automatically had that. And so from about 15 on, I mean, we even started at 12, 13, robbing parents' liquor cabinets and stuff like that. But really at 15, starting to find alcohol is a daily reprieve, and at least a weekend reprieve at that point, and making my focus mostly around friends that did that and whatnot. So that led to, you know, from 15 on, led to almost 23 years of wreckage and addiction. You know, during that time, myself and those around me suffered. You know, I suffered financially, physically. Kind of some of my patterns were to move around, do a lot of jobs. I would, you know, kind of get strung out, if you will. Drugs are part of my story, but I'm going to stick mostly to alcohol here tonight because I know that that's, you know, the program. But it was always alcohol from 15 to about 3 years ago. So it was always the base of alcohol, and it was pretty much daily. So I would get myself pretty good and washed out, and then I would clean up a little bit, be able to get a job, you know, establish back a few more relationships, and I would kind of continue that pattern again. And so that happened, you know, like yearly, or sometimes even bi-yearly, depending on how bad my addiction was at the time. So I kind of just got used to not being accountable, you know, ripping and running when, you know, not paying things in behind, leaving relationships behind, and jobs, and all that stuff. You know, sometimes I joke with myself, it's almost like I say, you know, like almost like a grifter would or something like that, you know, because it was just, it happened for so long that that was the lifestyle that I got used to. you know, not to mention the things that it did to, you know, financially or physically, you know, involving myself in high-risk behaviors, you know, especially through alcohol, you know, driving situations, you know, 2 decades of driving drunk, and, you know, luckily I've never, you know, killed anybody or obviously killed myself, but, you know, those high-risk behaviors that we put ourselves into, you know, I look back now and I just go, you know, I'm just so glad that I survived, as I'm sure, you know, a lot of people can relate with. You know, I was pretty emotionally dead by the time I started getting toward the end, of my road, you know, spiritually and emotionally. You know, a pattern of over excess, kind of cleaning up for a little bit, and then, you know, turning and running things back again. At the end of my 23-year addiction, I kind of ended up, I was divorced. I'd had 2 hip replacements that were due to partly genetics, and it wasn't a motorcycle accident or anything. It was partly genetics, and it probably was sped up by the fact that I had drank and smoked cigarettes and done drugs for 23 years straight. So, you know, the jury's kind of out on that, but it doesn't matter. At 38 years old, I had 2 hip replacements. Was addicted to alcohol, prescription drugs, and non-prescription drugs. I had a broken neck from a DUI accident and a broken soul, and I was laying on a jail room floor looking at 5 to 7 years jail time due to a little 2-county crime spree I went on over in eastern Washington. And the reason that I did this is because I really truly was so desperate at that time and so alone and depressed that I felt like I was either going to go home in an ambulance, you know, close to death, these things. Even when I went and did, it was 2 robberies, but when I went and did it was kind of a joke. It was surreal. I was just, you know, I grabbed a Frappuccino. I'm like, hey, just put the money in the bag. It wasn't even like a thing for me because I just was so happy to be going home with the police, you know, because I just truly felt like my life had gotten so out of control. And, you know, things worked out for me there. I ended up catching a break. I was a first-time offender, so I had never done it before, so I ended up only getting 18 months. And as soon as I got over the fact that I'd never been to prison before, you know, other than a night or jail or something like that, then I figured I was going to be okay. I was a little older. I was a bigger guy. You know, as long as I didn't do anything with the gangs or gamble, I was going to be fine. So I used that time to really dry out for the first time in my life. You know, it had been since I was 15 years old, so almost, you know, about puberty age. I had never been dried out for more than a couple days or a couple, you know, 3 to 5 days strung along. I think one period in my early 20s, I quit for 30 days for a girlfriend, but literally not very much time for a 23-year period. But I used that time to completely dry out my body, and I started getting in. And I still hadn't had AA in my life at this point. I started going to some AA meetings in prison, but like I said, that's not a pity party or anything. Prison was totally cool for me. I didn't have to do very much time. I got to just use it as a place to get cleaned up, and I'll just kind of leave it at that. But I did start going to a few AA meetings in there. I started reading a lot about different spiritual avenues and got to know a little bit about the program. On my way out, I really had a head full of steam. I was really doing good. But this just goes to show, you know, how powerful an addiction can be. I was completely convinced that I would never touch a drop of alcohol or drug again. 2 months out of prison, I was sleeping on my sister's floor. My family, my dad was having this open gut surgery. My family was all depressed. I have 4 sisters. None of them were doing well. And I ended up relapsing for like just a week. And, you know, I had a PO officer at the time and stuff like that. But that was enough for me. And I had a head full of steam that I was never, ever going to drink or do a drug again. And so I just went into my parole officer. I said, hey, I want to go to inpatient. So I stepped back from my process of being clean, and I went to inpatient, and then I went to outpatient from there. And just kind of obviously needed to learn some more about this disease and about myself, because being so motivated I was never going to drink again, to have that happen to me was a really moving experience. So, you know, my 2 hips in prison and, you know, all, not even talking the stories about the, you know, terrible things that happened that we all have seen you know, that happen when you're in the throes of your addiction, especially for 23 years, you know, didn't stop me. So I took it really seriously, and I did get a lot out of it, both inpatient and outpatient, and went to stay in a RV behind my parents' house, and I went down to 65th, which is LIS, for any of you who know that. Went to my first meeting there, and on my first meeting, I got my sponsor, Dave, who's still my sponsor today. I'm going into my third winter with him, and I don't count my incarcerated time, so I've just got about 3 years coming up of sobriety. But Dave was my first sponsor, and you know, I really attribute him and the 12 steps to saving my life. We went through. He's got a real strong bloodline of sponsors, and he took me through it, you know, just the way his sponsor had taken him through it. We got together every Thursday, and I remember those being some of the best Thursdays of my life. I didn't have anything going on. I didn't have a job, you know, whatever, but I was able to jump into the program and, like people said, take some time to really be able to do it. I was going to a meeting, at least one meeting a day, and then having a sponsor at that time. That has never turned back for me. So I've never been challenged. You know, my first meeting in AA is still my first meeting. And I'm really glad to have that. You know, I love this program. I love the people in it. Whenever I get a week or two away or, you know, get into my own head and I spend a week not going to meetings, I feel it right away. I can't explain what the power is or the presence in these meetings. But it works for me, and, you know, I really enjoy it. So it's definitely been a great part of my life, all that stuff. So since then, I've been back to school. I spent the last 2.5 years going to Seattle Central and managed to get myself a degree in social human services. And I also have a little minor certificate in chemical dependency certificate, or if I choose to... go that route, you know, I may or may not, I may end up doing something in social work. It's helped me establish or reestablish relationships with my family, you know. It's allowed me to say I'm sorry to a lot of people, and some people, you know, weren't there anymore. You know, I've seen a share of deaths and stuff in addiction as well. But it's allowed me to get my family back. It's allowed me to have a chance to have a new career. Even as a felon, I kind of picked out one that I can go back to, and because I'm kind of part of that system, that I can still be a felon and work in the social human service field. So it's allowed me to find a new career. I've got a wonderful girlfriend these days, and we have a relationship based on sobriety and communication and things that I never did before. I was always, you know, controlling, I mean, even sneakily, you know. So my relationships with people are really so much better than they used to be, and I owe it all to these steps. I have two sponsees right now, so I take those guys through the book, and it's really simple for me in the end. I've got about a minute left, but what this program comes down to me is, like, you know, I get up in the morning, I say my prayers and really surrender. I mean, I really surrender. I had a spiritual advisor at my meeting once tell me that, you know, I don't make any deals. You know, it's not like, oh, I'll surrender if, you know. There's no more deals. I just ultimately surrender when I start the day off. I find a couple times in the day to get quiet. I try to stick to, you know, 2 or 3 meetings a week. I do my sponsees and just try to be honest at the end of each day. And I really love this program. I love all you beautiful people out there. And that's going to close it out for me tonight.
Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed the podcast. Sobercast is ad-free, and we'd like your help in order to keep it that way. So if you'd like to help us be self-supporting by pledging $1 or $2 a month, visit Sobercast.com and look for the donate links. Thank you very much.